Hello, and welcome to the American Male Spouse Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Smith. Welcome to part two of my discussion with Mary. We've been talking about all things adoption and infertility, and we will continue to do that this episode, and we'll also just dig in and learn a little bit more about Mary. Be sure to follow us on social media at The American Male Spouse, and you can also read more about Mary and get some info on Christian Adoption Consultants, which we mentioned in the previous episode and we'll talk a bit about again. Check out www.theamericanmalespouse.com for some links to info on that. And here is part two.
What do you wish throughout the adoption process, and it's probably especially relevant now as you begin to go through it again, mm-hmm. but what do you wish you could have told yourself when you're going through that? Or what would you like to have known?
There's a lot of things. I wish I had been more educated about the ethics of adoption going into it, which, you know, and everything about Addison's situation was very ethical, and I should make sure I say that. But I just didn't. I went into it with so much fear. Like we talked about earlier, sitting in the hospital, there was, even though in my heart I wanted to believe if she changed her mind and she decided to parent, that I would support her, I was probably like 5% feeling that and 95% feeling fear that this was going to be taken from me, which is,
I get that.
I don't even feel right saying that, because being taken from me makes it sound, you know, she wasn't mine. That's that's hard to word it that way. But there was so much fear. I mean, when I felt nothing but excitement going into that process, but the minute I got the phone call that she was born, at 2 a.m, while Ryan was teeny white and Ellis, and I was home with family, and we had no baby stuff with us, because that's how life goes.
Right.
There was so much fear, because I just suddenly, that's all I could, I just couldn't get past that. Just the fear that the situation could change. Mm-hmm. I wish I could go back and level that out and have myself at least be like 50-50 on the fear and the respect of her ultimately her decision and her, you know, authority to make that decision.
Sure.
Going into it a second time, I hope that I think I will be a lot more prepared to have more respect and patience and admiration. And, you know, like I've kind of pictured what would happen if a second adoption is disrupted and it doesn't mentally paralyze me the way that it did when we were going into Addison's. But that's taken, you know, a couple years of educating myself as we've gone on since we had brought Addison home. And I've just taken the time to read things and, you know, read the experiences of adoption from, you know, all sides of the adoption triad. And I hope I can be better about that this time. I think we were fully supportive of them in the hospital. You know, without getting too personal, Addison's situation, it was, she had made her decision, her birth mother. Yeah. And so really my fear was pretty unfounded, but, you know, I want to go into it with less fear this time, primarily, and more faith, but.
That's good for you. And that's growth big time, because I do not think you're alone, speaking for myself as well. I did the same. You're so full of fear. And I don't know if that's accurate to say. There's something about it being your first child, something about like the entire experience being like, you can almost taste it, like motherhood. Mm-hmm. And so I think that maybe there's something about, once you've become a mother, you can respect all sides a little bit differently. I can see the weight of what Annie's birth mom went through is only amplified by Annie now, you know,
and
trying to get my head around what it had to be like. I can't, but I think you're definitely not alone in where you were. And I think that I agree. The more I'm the same, where I'm still just always learning and trying to get my head around things. And I think, I like to think I would be the same if we went through that process again, but it's also really that first time, especially. It's so foreign.
Yes.
It's such a different, you know, you can prep as much as you think you can, but until you're in right. the moment, like, holy cow, that's
no, that
nothing like it.
Yes, there is nothing like that at all.
Mm-hmm. It's like, sometimes I still look back and I'm like, that happened. We did that.
Yeah. Yeah. some of those moments, like walking into the hospital and stuff. I mean, I can remember it visually, but I was on autopilot. Mm-hmm. I was completely overwhelmed, excited, mm-hmm. and so fearful, and mm-hmm. just so many emotions. But yeah,
agreed. And I do think too, something that's a little bit tricky with that. I don't know that it's I don't know how I would change it, but going back to friends supporting the process,
mm-hmm.
that gets really tangled too, because I know friends like threw us a baby shower, and I right. there's a part of me that even still, as we did for you, you know, was like, this is all part of the experience, this is something that I don't want you to have to miss out on,
mm-hmm.
because this is still your child. But again, like we said, it is still your child at the end. But I think that there are some parts of it that perhaps realistically are maybe should be part of the biological experience, as mm-hmm. far as the timeline of it goes.
Yeah, yes.
That I know, like for me, I, you know, a friend says, I want to throw you a baby shower. That's amazing. Yes, thank you. But in hindsight, if I think about how I would have best prepared myself, maybe it would have been better to have waited.
Yeah.
In terms of going into it with the purest, most sincere mindset of respecting the entire process.
Yes, yes.
And mm-hmm. and that's something that's just, and I don't know if that's right. I'm just thinking about my own experience, where my own mindset was. That perhaps that is something about this process that does maybe need to be different, that needs to happen afterward, for instance, or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
But
right.
there are things that the most supportive of people, it's hard because it's like you want to have that joy of basically,
right.
like, quote unquote, we're having a baby, we're bringing this baby home. Mm-hmm. I want to give into this joy and this experience and feel what it feels like to anticipate a child, but it isn't. It is not mm-hmm. yet your child, and
right.
kind of respect that.
Yeah.
It is very, for me, it's in conflict with the ways that you want to celebrate that experience. The ways
yes.
that you celebrate it are ways that lay claim to a child that is not yet yours. And that's
mm-hmm.
tricky.
It is. Yeah, it is very tricky. It makes me grateful, you know, whether I know some of you here had wanted to throw a shower for me that got stalled mm-hmm. because Addison came early.
Right.
So it ended up being a welcome home party for
yes.
her, which in hindsight, I remember even thinking at that time, like, it seems like it's better this way.
Mm-hmm.
And now going forward, I know that it does. It just seems like it's more appropriate that mm-hmm. way. It feels like.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I agree. And that's just a learning thing. Like, that's not how
yeah.
I did it. And if I were to do it nope. again, I would do it differently. And that's, again, right. that's for me and what I would have needed to prepare my own heart properly. You know,
yes.
that doesn't mean that somebody who has a shower beforehand is going to mentally frame things the same way I would. That's just
yeah.
my own
sure.
thing. But
right.
anyway, okay. Give me the next. Sorry, I know we're taking a long time, but you know this. I knew this was going to happen.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad. This is
my answers are not short.
No, your answers are wonderful, and I am not worried about it at all. And you just tell me if you need to go, because you know this is special to my heart. So,
same.
Tell me how you would want Addison to describe you.
Oh boy, I know. I thought about this one quite a bit. I think the first word that came to my mind is devoted. You know, that's, I try to be so, so very intentional about my days and my time with her, just even to the point of, you know, it's such a little thing, but if I don't have a reason, like I'm not expecting a phone call, most of the time when she's awake, my phone is up on the mantle of the fireplace so that I don't tend to wander off and get distracted on it. And I'm just intentional and spending the time with her that, you know, not to, I waited 7 years for that. And so just being with her and being intentional about reading and playing and doing all the things with her, I hope that she will remember that. And I would hope that that would be the first thing that comes to mind. And then kind is another thing that I hope that's my, one of my biggest things I want to impart to her and to any of my children is just to be kind always to anyone and everyone in this world. And I try my best to be an outward example of that for her, just going out of my way to help anyone whenever I can. And I hope that she will kind of embody that same virtue when she grows up. And I hope that, I mean, you know, I hope that she would say I'm fun too. Like I do try to make sure that we're been, oh my goodness, I know everyone's been stuck at home because of COVID, but when we got stuck at home in isolation for those first couple of months without Ryan here, there was a little bit of extra pressure to like, we, you know, we suddenly couldn't go to swim lessons or library classes. And it was like, okay, how do we find fun right here in our own front yard? And, you know, we found it in the most unlikely of places. And I am not even kidding when I tell you Addison's favorite activity is walking to the end of our neighborhood to play in a pile of dirt. And it is her favorite thing. I can't tell you how many afternoons she says, I want to go to the dirt pile.
Oh.
There were many COVID afternoons we spent just sitting down there digging in the dirt. But it's such a little thing, but it means so much to her and it's so much fun to her. And so even if it might be a little boring to me, well, I hope she'll always realize that I do my best to make sure that we were having fun days, even when the world was upside down.
Mm-hmm. That's something I think everyone I've talked to who grew up as a military kid has said such similar things that would embody exactly what you're doing right now, where it was, I didn't know about the stress. I didn't know about the deployment. I didn't know about whatever. I just knew you know, about the dirt pile.
Right.
And I think that's like such an ultimate military mom goal is just, I hope you remember the good part of whatever it is. I hope you, you're going to, and like, you know, Annie's getting the age where it's like, I know you're going to know your dad's gone, but I hope you remember the walk to the coffee shop. And I hope you remember the little things that you make work given very little outside stimulation at this.
And that's a lesson I learned from my mom too, you know, since I, again, grew up in this lifestyle. And I can tell you, I mean, it's the same experience for me. I can remember so many random little positive things like that from the places we lived. And now as I've gotten older and my mom will share stories about what was actually going on at those assignments or the things that my dad was doing or, you know, involved in with his, whatever he was doing in his job. And yeah, I would have never known. I have my memories of all the friends I had in that base and all the things we would do playing outside. And yeah, just, and even just inside our home, she just, she was so good about that, about making sure that it was the fun things and the positive things stood out to us. And then in a way carrying over some sense of like normalcy each time we moved. And because that's a big part of it too, is when you're uprooting and moving to a whole new place, it's, you know, she was so good about just bringing that sense of normalcy back so fast. I can only remember being excited to move all throughout my childhood. Like I don't think any of them were ever particularly hard. Maybe the first couple of days when it would be like, oh, I don't get to see those friends again. But I mean, each time we got someplace new, it was just, all right, we get to make new friends and we get to, it's a new house and new memories. But I don't know, she did a good job. And
that's, that should hopefully serve as comfort to you too. I know when you're moving now with Addie, that you can do that too. And you will do that. And I know it's scary the first time, especially, but they're resilient. They don't say that Missouri kids are resilient for no reason. They they learn, okay, this is my house now. Okay.
Yep. We will find another dirt pile and everything will be okay.
Exactly. All right. Tell me about a military spouse who changed you.
Oh man. Okay. Oh my goodness. I wish I could give a shout out to like 15 different people, but honestly, you're one of the ones who was my biggest support. Aww. coming into this. Just those years in Wichita Falls were the hardest for me. You know that. And there were a few people who were always there for me, kind of like I was alluding to earlier. I had a few people who were always there for me. You were one of them. And I told Ryan so many times that I would not have gotten through my years there without you. Even though you guys left before we did, you still maintained that connection. And you were there for me in ways that I know I've thanked you enough over the years, but I can never say it enough.
Well, that means that. Thank you.
We had another friend. Well, we were in the FAPE squadron. My friend Lisa, she's another one who was there for me. She was so intuitive, and mm-hmm. like the times when I was really struggling with things, there were so many times I didn't even have to say anything. She just knew to say or do a certain thing to help me out in a situation, which a lot of times they were social situations mm-hmm. where I wasn't very quick on my feet, if that's the right way to word it. Sometimes, I don't know. Like, I think I was still learning the ropes of I just wanted to talk about like, oh, well, I'm having a crappy day because infertility sucks and here's X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. But so sometimes there were social situations where I would just be at a loss for words.
Okay.
And she was always right there, just stepping right in, seamlessly filling in the blanks for me. And just in it, I mean, it was incredible to me sometimes the way that she just knew. Mm-hmm. And I'm forever, forever grateful for that support. And she's across the world now on the other side, but we still maintain just a super, super close connection.
Good.
And she was just such a positive person too. And mm-hmm. I mean, that's always one of the most, any friendships that you form, the someone else who's positive is just such a critical thing in all of these assignments. But because, you know, when you have those rough days, mm-hmm. you need someone to lean on. It's always so nice to have someone who can also uplift you at the same mm-hmm. time. Like, yeah, some days I just want you to vent with me and we can just drink wine and be, you know, sure. bitter together. But she was always, always so good about lifting me up at the mm-hmm. end of it as well. And yeah, just, I've met so many incredible people though. I could mm-hmm. go on and on about.
I know.
So many.
There's a lot of, I mean, it's a special breed, and having these yeah. conversations has been such a fun way to underscore that for me. Talking yeah. to some people who have been friends for what feels like forever and people who I've never spoken to before. And these undercurrents of similarities in endurance and resolve, and just there are such different people and mm-hmm. these certain traits that are so similar, so much optimism, and I think a lot of sincerity, I think, is the biggest thing
that I've
run into. Is just, I think we are brought to our knees more regularly, perhaps, than mm-hmm. than some, in terms of the things that we face and deal with humble us more frequently, and just sort of create maybe a little bit more straightforward personality type, perhaps. I don't know if straightforward is the right word, but just a little bit more, this is who I am.
Yes.
I think yeah. because we move and we meet people and you mesh and you don't, and whatever the case may be.
Right.
I think we're humbled kind of frequently, and we're also just kind of forced to be like, this is me. This is right. as much as I can.
We're pretty blunt. You just
mm-hmm. yeah, we're just
yeah,
because it's just more efficient.
It is.
You know,
yeah,
this is me. I'm, for instance, I'm pretty sarcastic. If that's going to be a huge issue, then
yeah,
we can be friendly. But you're probably right. not going to want to invest a ton of time here. Right. Not going away. I've tried, but yeah, I think that it's just, there's a sincerity and a protectiveness that we all have for each other that is
yeah, there is
impressive and
right.
I love hearing about the, I just love hearing about those different stories and hearing about different ways that spouses have affected each other and impacted each other and things that I think a lot of times maybe, and I don't want to speak for them, but like for instance, for Lisa to hear, maybe she wouldn't even recognize that that's what resonated with you.
Yeah, but maybe.
To hear it for me, yeah. Then it's like such a great takeaway. Next time I see someone in a situation, you know, just, it's cool. It's cool hearing. And a lot of the times I find that it, the people who have changed people tend to be people who step up. It's the person who kind of goes a little extra for whatever, in whatever capacity. It doesn't mean.
Right. It can be, it can be the smallest gesture or the smallest word sometimes, but it's, yeah.
But like in your situation, it's, I don't know what to say here. Like just, I'm just, that she's like, I'm just going to take the lead. I'm just going to step in. I'm just going to be that person and, you know, just go for it.
Right. So, yeah.
Okay. Last part here, because the girls are getting in trouble too. So I'll try to be hear somebody getting yelled at. Okay, but this part is like kind of the rapid fire portion, so it's pretty quick and low pressure. So first one is your favorite place you've ever lived.
Oh, it's Boise, hands down. Boise, Idaho. I've already, you know, I've told you, moving from here is going to be, I think, the hardest one, and I have moved my entire life, but it's, yeah, just everything about the city, everything about the state, and the people here are just, we love it.
I know. It's, there's something about it, man. And that's a huge testament from you, especially because you have been.
Like and it's, you know, it's almost hard to explain. Sometimes I don't even have a way to explain it to people. I'm like, I just love this city. I don't know, but pretty positive we'll come back here when Ryan's done in the Air Force one day.
Well, we can all settle down there together then, because I wouldn't be mad about that either.
Perfect.
Okay, next one. First place you want to travel after COVID?
Oh, well, I would say Hawaii, but that's probably just coming from a little place of bitterness. We were supposed to go there post-deployment. Oh, we had everything planned. It was going to be so perfect too. We had, Ryan's parents were going to come too and offer free babysitting for the whole time we were there. And that was hard to cancel all of those reservations. So, you know, that's, we have been saying as soon as the world is normal and we've gotten a hold of COVID, we will probably go to Hawaii. That's going to be the top of our list. But I also feel like I don't know if I want that to be my answer because I've been to Hawaii before. This is just, we're just going to make it happen because it has to.
Yeah.
If but if I, if we could go anywhere else, I would want to go to Australia and New Zealand. Okay. Those have kind of been my bucket list, kind of the top of my bucket list. And I think I have been very lucky in my life to have seen and experienced so many places the way I did. Mm-hmm. My dad was stationed overseas 3 times. So I have lived in Europe 2 times and I lived in Japan. I was old enough to remember experiences from all of those places, particularly Germany, because I was in high school when we were there. So, I mean, it's incredible. I love that country, but I'm kind of feeling like I want to go somewhere I haven't been yet. I've been lucky enough to be all over Europe and I've made it to Asia and it's like, all right, what's next? Let's go to Australia.
Yes. Kyle wants to go to New Zealand so bad too, but I still have a lot of places in Europe I want to go first.
Yeah.
And we'll get there. We'll get there, I'm sure.
Right.
We can travel again. But
oh, Lord willing.
He's also like, he wants to go to New Zealand. And I'm like, I think I'm afraid of most of the things you want to do there. Like, I don't want to go. I'm not a big water person. I'm not like, I'm not good at nature. And I feel like that's what makes me afraid. I'm like, maybe go to like Italy and like do a heavy like pasta trip.
Yeah.
And then maybe like, like I mostly like to center my trips around like food, where New Zealand feels more like a lot of like bugs and animals. They're never gonna let Americans in.
I was gonna say they may not. We can't even go to Canada.
yeah, no kidding. Okay, what is your favorite way to waste time?
Oh man, favorite way to waste time. It's not a good answer, but you know, just sitting on Instagram probably. Which I don't do much of these days. I've just found myself on social media less and less. Mm-hmm. I I don't know. I think I kind of just got burned out on it over the last few months. And, but when I've had a particularly stressful day of parenting a 2-year-old, that's definitely probably my way to unwind is like that and a glass of wine and probably just sitting somewhere outside getting fresh air.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
The kind of a mental, just turn off your brain and scroll.
Yes. Yes. Very much. Like, don't want to be thinking about anything for a few minutes and I don't want to answer a question for the next 2 minutes.
Oh my gosh. This is big into, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Oh.
I'm sitting here with you. We're sit. Like, yeah. We're sitting. How are you doing? Still just with you. Nobody's in the mood. But yeah.
Yeah. Addie's is making sure that I'm looking at everything. And same thing. I'm sitting right next to her and she's like, mommy, look what I'm doing. I'm like, oh, I see. No, mommy, look.
It's my responsibility to watch what you're doing. At all.
Right.
Sure you are. Okay. Tell me the biggest challenge of MILF spouse life.
Oh man. The biggest challenge. It's hard to pick one. The biggest one would probably have to fall to like, which I know I've heard you discuss it with some of the other podcasts you've done, but it's just the, how difficult it can be to have a career and or finish education for yourself. I was lucky that I had the time to finish my bachelor's while we were in Wichita Falls. But ever since then, I've been stuck in a rut of, I wanted to go on and get my master's and I was working on a dietitian. So like, it's a clinical program, so it can't be online. Although these days it might be able to, I should probably look into it now, but
that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. In the years past, it's because it's clinical. It involves like, I forget, 1,000 or 2,000 hours of like an internship.
Okay.
So it was something that I didn't have enough time to finish in the rest of our time at Wichita Falls. We got to North Carolina and found out that that is one of 3 states in the country where you can't do clinical programs online. Yeah. So I was completely on hold in North Carolina. Then we moved here and the only school in state that could have done anything for me was, I think it would have been Idaho State, but it was their campus in Moscow, Moscow. Hours away from here. And so it was, I remember the professor I talked to here in Boise was like, well, is there any chance you could move out there for just like a year? And I was like, no, no chance. Is there, I mean, there was nothing, there was no option to do it here in Boise. I was back to the same square of, I could do academics online, but then I was going to have to basically do the legwork of just going through places in Boise to see if there would be someone who would basically just be willing to be like a preceptor for me. And this was around the time we were working on bringing Addison home. So it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
And it's tough because if we had stayed in one place, I would have my master's and I'd probably have, like a clinical certification to my name, but I don't. And now that we're going back to North Carolina, I'm already wondering how I can make that happen again in the one state that won't let me do that clinical program online. So it is hard. It is so hard to I can't, like I'm sure all of us do. There are so many times when I'm just like, all right, well, what's another career path that'll be more portable that I could do instead? Because what I wanted to do isn't going to happen.
Right. Like what else can I get excited for?
Yeah.
Like how do I create a passion out of one of the following 3 careers that can move with,
Oh my goodness.
Like, how do I get past my disdain for blood and become a nurse? you start being like, well, if you want a career, like there are a few that are more portable than others.
Right.
But yeah, I feel you there. Okay. And then the last question is your favorite thing about MILF spouse life.
The friendships. That's easy. And that can go all the way back to my childhood too. Just the friends that I've made at every place I've lived. I mean, I have maintained friendships in various countries across the world over the last 30 years. And even now, my best friend, she lives out in Virginia, she's completely unconnected to the military now, but she has been my best friend since our dads were in Japan together and we were 6 years old.
Aww.
And it's cool to see how far back, I mean, how it's kind of like you talked about, just the endurance of the friendship like that. And now that I'm in it as a military wife, I mean, I know that, so many of the friendships I've made, they're going to endure just as long. And it's just, it's incredible. And it's so, I'm a people person. I love just hearing everyone's story whenever I meet someone. And it's always so fascinating to me to hear just how different everyone's story is, but how yet here we are, we're all in such a similar situation now, but just, yeah, just hearing that vast array of experiences is such a cool thing mm-hmm. to me.
Agreed. And I think back even to like when we met and the fact that I think back now, how early in our friendship, you and Ryan were experiencing the early stages of your struggle with infertility, and that at that point, Kyle and I weren't even married, I don't think, and how much of a blessing it ended up being to have you in the trenches and to have someone who was experiencing that, and just to have mm-hmm. that like, safe space or the place where we could speak more freely or speak mm-hmm. more raw emotion and that sort of thing. And the way that this community builds people who have just been through everything you can imagine, somebody who has seen what you're seeing or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be, or even in your case, if not before, at least there's somebody next to you who's also going through a deployment in a pandemic, you know?
Right. Oh, gosh.
There's just always, there are people there alongside you, which is what makes this whole deal an adventure instead of a mm-hmm. challenge more often than
not. Right. There are so many things in this life that can make you feel so isolated. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with the exception of the few months of COVID, I've never felt that way because, like you said, there's always someone there. Mm-hmm. You always, it's just such a tight community, mm-hmm. no matter what community you're in or what base you're at, there is always someone there for you. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's probably, not that we need to keep going down this track, but that was probably the hardest part of when the COVID isolation happened was, for those of us here, I'm just speaking for our squadron, because they were still deployed. Our spouses were still gone. And the one thing we really had to keep us going was, you know, that we were constantly hanging out and doing things together, and we were maintaining that social connection with each other. And as soon as we weren't allowed to do that anymore, that was when, you know, it was all right. Well, I'm here at home with my 2-year-old and this is it.
Endless, and, right? With no yes, end of sight, no idea when it's not just we're hunkered down for a week or two. It's like
TBD. It was hard. It was hard to have Ryan extended and gone longer, but it was like almost just as hard to be like, and now we can't see our friends because mm-hmm. you know they were our support, they were our mm-hmm. lifeline. Like we were each other's lifeline through the whole deployment.
That's the silver lining of the deployment, are the friendships, the bond that you form during it.
Right.
Well, friend, we did it. That's it.
I will happily risk sounding like a broken record when I say how grateful I am for my friend and her voice and her heart. I also want to invite anyone with more questions about adoption to feel free to reach out to our social media accounts at The American Mill Spouse, and I will happily give any insight I can, as well as try to connect you with others like Mary who might be able to help. It can feel really daunting to get started, and we both completely understand that. I hope you have a great week, and we'll talk soon.